Okay, it's 1990, July the 15th. Okay, now let's see. Are there any announcements this morning? Yes, there's one that I think of immediately, and that is we'll be gone the next two weekends. And Robert, you'll be having the meetings for the next two Sundays. And let's see. Greetings were sent from Fullerton last week. And Kevin?
I was asked to bring a letter to Brother Tim and Don Krupa before the...
Ah, thank you.
I was asked to bring the love of Virginia Pomblin and Lorraine Walters.
That's appreciated as well.
And Betty Blair.
And Betty Blair, good. It's awfully nice to see you, Richelieu.
And sister, who do you stay with up at Portland? Jim or Phil?
Oh,
no. Oh, God, I'm on here. Robert.
Sister Stella?
No.
Or Stephanie?
Stephanie. Okay. She wanted me to bring her love to anybody that knew her.
Ah, that's most good.
Tell her the people that didn't know her were sorry that they didn't get any love. Help teach them.
Well, I want to thank everybody for their kindness and their notes and that. Got a nice group from Portland Convention, and I think there were five sheets from the L.A. Convention.
Oh, boy.
And I was quite happy about that.
They used to know the right people, don't they?
Of course, I don't know 90% of them.
You know you. We told them about you.
Must have.
Thank you. There it is.
I bring the greetings of Renata, who should be safely in Poland, we hope, today, and Billy Calhoun. He's now home and doing pretty well.
It was good to see him July 1st. Or was it June 30th?
Tell him what happened to Renata.
Well, Renata had just a bit of a delay taking off yesterday. Somebody had left had checked in their luggage on the plane and then did not get on the plane. So they had about a three-hour delay while they deboarded everyone, lined up the luggage with everyone going, and then tried to figure out which luggage was left to see if there was a bomb on it. So she didn't leave until 4 o'clock, and she was on the plane at 11 yesterday.
Oh, that must have been fun.
Yeah, but these days it's necessary.
A lot better than saying, oh, well, and then wished I had of.
Yeah.
Did they find out where that was?
She didn't know.
Yeah. Okay, is there anything else to be brought up before we launch into Daniel 8:15? Teresa?
I think we would have some pretty disappointed people if we didn't take some love back to Portland with Annabelle and Kevin.
Yeah, that's right. We won't be around to do that. definitely. And to all the class.
Give our love to Stephanie if she knows us.
In other words, you want me to tell her what I said.
Yeah.
I'll do that, Robert.
Well, she started naming them over, and then she said, well, all those that know me.
I guess I have to meet her.
Oh, she's, you love her.
Yeah, that's true.
How about Dorothy? Is she still up there?
Yes.
Well, doing fine. I'd love to back to her, too.
You mean Dorothy Jackson?
Dolan.
Dorothy Dolan. Oh, okay. Sure, by all means.
I've talked to her since we got home. Oh, Althea Croker.
Yes.
She's moving there this direction from out in the desert. I have heard that she's already moved.
To where?
She's got a house, and I don't know where it is, but her son's in Mahabra. And she got instructions how to get to our class and when the Wednesday meeting was and all that kind of stuff. And I gave her all the instructions. And then when she finished all that, she wanted her love brought to our class.
Fine.
So I don't know what class she'll be attending. But
from La Habra, let's see, it's probably not too horribly far from the Murrays.
Yeah.
Or Esther Hall.
Yeah. She. There's nobody out in the desert anymore with... Ken
right.
Moving in, I think. Isn't he moving in or something?
Something like that, yeah.
So she's leaving. Mm-hmm. I have heard that she's already got a house. I don't know if she's rented it or purchased it, but
It would be nice to, for some of the brethren here to see her more often, a lot more.
Yeah, you see two leave and then one comes. She just...
Yeah.
Oh, I got a letter from Wavi. She would kill me. And she sends her love.
Well, we're looking
forward
to her getting
back. She'll be
home
in a week or so. She's staying at Jeffrey's and until they have their housewarming. Then she can come home, she said.
And how is her daughter getting along?
Her daughter is in a walking cast now and just fine.
Tell her she shouldn't get plastered.
No, she shouldn't get plastered. Maybe caught an 8-pound fish or something on her.
Okay. So, anything further before we commence with...
I think I told you, but Brett's sister, Nettie Pig, was in the hospital with pneumonia after she left L.A.
And he wasn't feeling too well himself, was he?
It was still good to see them, but I'm sorry she had to catch pneumonia for it. I hope she'll be out soon.
He said she was resting as well as she could when I talked to him. It was the day before yesterday, I think.
Yeah. Okay. It's Robert.
Since a few of us had the opportunity to get to San Diego last week, maybe Kevin would like to fill in some of the highlights of his experience.
I'd like to hear about it, if others would.
Well, if I started to talk about this, we'd never stay.
I have something I would like to tell. He taped all of them, you know. So in the middle of the night, I would get up, get a lesson, and plug it in. And I was listening to one the other night, and I kept listening. They taped Richard Evans snoring, and I was listening to him snore. This is that tonight.
That's sheet music.
Yeah. It woke me up completely.
We couldn't resist. He was in the next cabin over, and we could still hear him.
Oh, boy.
So Brother Ragno asked to borrow the tape recorder.
I'm going to send it to him.
And Nathan Austin's talking in his sleep also is on the team.
Oh.
Very.
But the studies that they did get were great. One tape was bad, and that was Carl's, wouldn't you know?
Well, I don't know about others. Others should speak up one way or the other, but I'd be glad to hear about it.
Well, I wasn't there nearly as long as you were. Why don't you tell what struck you as the highlight?
Well,
yeah, which girl was it?
I would have to just say the studies.
Mm-hmm. Which one?
Of them.
Good. Which ones?
Especially, if I had to choose two, I would say Brother Having Six and Brother Nicoras. Brother Nicora had one on the Church Grid Company, Ancient Worthies in the World. It was the fastest hour and 45 minutes ever come. Brother Hagen sits on Israel and prophecy, which some very nice brother helped me out on a little bit. Robert.
Robert and Kevin studied that.
I gave him all the wrong answers. He didn't know it until he got there.
See, Kevin didn't get his paper to study ahead of time like the others did. He got his just 2 or 3 days, and he was cramming.
Yeah.
But I hear that he... Okay.
But no one told Kevin that he was assigned certain questions to answer. So he was all.
I wasn't assigned because I got mine Saturday night at the Los Angeles convention, and I was leaving on Wednesday, so I wasn't assigned any questions. At least none that I found out about.
So then, the two study highlights, if you were to pick just two, would have been Michael Nicoras on the church, that is the little flock, the great company, and the ancient worthies, was it?
Yeah.
And then the other by Carl Hagensick on the Israel in history and prophecy?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Kevin also starred in a play.
I did.
Seeing me, I remember one up at Fresno.
Oh, I'm like a Hollywood guy.
Oh, you like it?
That was Fresno.
He was Elijah at Fresno. What were you at down there? I wasn't with him down there. I don't know what he did. He's branched out since. He doesn't hang on to my coattails anymore. I hang on to his. What were you?
A worldly person.
Tell him about the play.
Well, why doesn't Robert? He helped her not to write the play.
But he wants to know what you got out of it, the lesson. And I think that's a good lesson.
Well,
that the young people should be advantageous to the younger ones.
Well, the basic lesson was, it was a question, it was about this girl, Sue, who Michelle Prasad played, and then Ron. No, Sue was,
I think
that was Emily, and Taj played that. And then Ron was Nathan, and Emily was in the truth, and Ron was a worldly person, and she was in love with Ron, but she knew that it wouldn't have been right to be with him, or to have a relationship with him.
Unevenly.
Because he had to be unequally yoked with him, because he was in the world. And then all of Emily's friends were taking Ron's side in the matter, and trying to talk her into entering into a relationship with Emily. And then it just kind of stopped.
And Frank was his best friend, and you were Frank.
Yeah.
You were Ron's best friend?
Yeah.
You tried to talk Emily into
entering a relationship.
Who did Emily have on the side for things? She thought that she was completely on her own.
She had God.
She had God, yeah. She had God with Brother
Haddington. There is a saying that one with God is the majority.
Mm-hmm. And it ended with...
She
was
had
thinking.
To draw your own conclusion. She was the voice of God was at the end.
But she was looking up and listening. So if she was listening to God, you know who won.
Yeah.
Okay.
I heard it, so I'll have to elaborate a little more on it. It was very good. The fact is that she really cared for him. And yet they would have been unevenly yoked. And in the world, it would have would not have made for the marriage wouldn't have lasted, and he everybody didn't understand why she just go with it, do what makes you happy. It doesn't matter, God doesn't care, or so forth. I'm ad-libbing, but she was listening to them, but she still was relying on God and reading her Bible, and she. In my mind, she realized at the end that God knew best that she would lean on him. Frank didn't persuade her. He was right.
Yeah.
So it was very good. I really thought that was a nice lesson for the young people.
The topic of the day was sacrifice.
The topic of the camp was sacrifice.
Yeah. It's one of the sacrifices sometimes we have to make.
And they had a study on Brother Lego, Lagno, brought out how you can sacrifice, and that was part of his study and everything. And since then, Kevin and I've been sacrificing. I've been dragging
standing
along.
Fair.
Standing books for the fair and going up to the center. I'm not young. I can't live like this, Kevin. Anyway, he's really full of zeal.
Okay, anything further now before we launch into Daniel? I think it's 8:15, isn't it? Yes.
I happened into a little study there at the center about the first night we were there, and Carl was leading it, and was on some of this we've studied, and I was able to answer several of the questions.
Right.
But I think I asked him what the fire was that it was on Elijah. That dissolved the sacrifice, and he said it's lightning.
You mean came down from heaven?
Uh-huh. He says lightning, but that doesn't
appeal.
Satisfy me.
As I recall, and I could recall incorrectly, there weren't any clouds in the sky, so it would have to have been a form of lightning that doesn't depend on cloud charge buildup.
Well, it was brought out too, you know, that the seawater attracted lightning, the salt in it.
I don't know if that's true. It may be. I just don't know.
I heard that twice. I think once at the center and once...
Salt water does conduct electricity.
Oh.
It's caused to. But I don't know whether that's...
Attract.
Yeah, because you don't hear much about lightning storms out in the ocean.
They have storms, have you?
They sure do. Ones that most folks did not like to be in, those typhoons. But I think the majority of electrical storms occur over land. But anyway, there's a lot I don't know. That's just one more thing to add to the list.
I thought you knew that Bible mandate.
He does. That's the only thing he doesn't know.
Sure. Okay, Daniel 8:15. And as we begin, let's see. Al, would you read 15 through 17, and Al, 18 through 22, and then Kevin, 23 to the end of the chapter.
And it came to pass, when I, Daniel, had seen the vision, and sought for the meaning then, behold, there stood before me as the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of Ulai, which called and said, Gabriel, make this man to understand the vision. So he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell upon my face. But he said unto me, understand, O son of man, for at the time of the end shall be the vision.
Now as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep on my face toward the ground. But he touched me and set me upright.
Go ahead.
And he said, behold, I will make thee know what shall be in the last end of the indignation. For at the time appointed, the end shall be the ram which thou sawest, having two horns, are the kings of Media and Persia. And the rough goat is the king of Grecia. And the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power.
And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are turned to the foe, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up, and his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power, and he shall destroy wonderfully and shall prosper and practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. And through his policy also he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many. He shall also stand up against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without end. And the vision of the evening and the morning, which was told, is true. Wherefore shut thou up the vision, for it shall be for many days. And I, Daniel, fainted, and was sick 7 days. Afterward I rose up and did the king's business, and I was astonished at the vision, but none understood it.
Okay. First of all, in the 15th verse, what is Daniel thinking?
Something of meaning.
That's right. He wanted to know what it meant, and then he hears this man's voice between the two banks of the river Ulai. Now, where have we read about the river Ulai?
Genesis, coming out of the Garden of Eden?
That I know of.
I don't know.
It was in Babylon, of course.
It was a river somewhere. Was it in Babylon? I think so. If we go back to Daniel 8:2, what does it tell us about Ulai?
Oh, it's by Shushan the Palace.
That's right.
What's the point?
What's that?
What was the point?
Okay, where we have found this river Ulai or Ulai before. And it was not in Babylon. It was down southeast of Babylon in a territory between Persia and Babylon, but which in history was more commonly associated with Persia than it was Babylon. At this particular point, however, it must have been controlled by Babylon until the Persians came in. But what was the vision? He wants to understand the vision. What vision?
The ram and that had two horns and so forth.
Mm-hmm. We could divide this vision into three parts, possibly four parts, but primarily three parts. And what are the three parts? Teresa?
The he-goat, the ram, and the he-goat again?
Does the he-goat start out? Okay, we'll try Kevin and then Robert.
The ram with two horns and then when his horns broke.
Okay, we first got the ram. He's the first dominant one in the picture, in the dream. What's the next dominant one? Robert?
I would say that the he-goat is the next one.
That's right.
And have the small horn.
That's right. And then the small horn. What was characteristic of the small horn?
It was exceedingly great.
Yeah.
And we proved from the core that it was papacy. We thought.
Are the things said about the little horn nice or not nice or rotten or wonderful?
He was very proud and magnified himself in the entire
world. Mm-hmm. Did he do any evil, though?
Cast down the hosts of the stars to the ground.
That's right.
And stamped upon them.
What else did he do?
People trusted in him and as a result lost themselves.
Magnified himself. Kevin?
I was just going to say he magnified himself.
That's right. And what else? All these are correct answers and worth noting. Kevin?
He cast down the truth and prospered.
That's right. He cast down the truth and prospered. And did he take anything away? What did he do just before he cast down the truth?
Took away the truth.
Okay. Yes. Cindy?
He said that he cast down some of the hosts and the stars to the ground, stamped upon it.
That's right.
What did she say?
Verse 10.
Mm-hmm.
Takes away the regular sacrifice.
Okay. Regular sacrifice or continual burnt offering. So, all these things are pertinent. Which of the three elements of the vision, the ram, the goat, and the little horn, is the most atrocious? Cindy? I think so. That as bad as the others, or violent as the others may have been, the things that pertained to the continual burnt offering, the truth, the Lord's host, these were simply trampled underfoot or otherwise destroyed, damaged by the little horn. So let's sort of keep that in mind then as we go through these verses. This man's voice between the banks of the river Ulai, who is he? Or where does this voice come from?
The heavens, I imagine.
That's right.
gave her.
Okay, it's got to be one of two, because he is in a position to command Gabriel. So it's got to be either God himself or the Logos. Yes, Annabelle?
It would have to be the Logos, because the scripture says no man has seen God nor heard his voice.
Okay, okay, that's a pretty strong argument.
So,
go ahead.
In verse 25, there's something that kind of baffles me. I'd like to ask a question about.
Go ahead.
Where it says, by peace shall destroy many. I'm trying to figure out how the destruction of many can be done by peace.
Okay. Teresa, does your version read just slightly different?
My version says, and in their security shall he destroy many. He's going to make them feel that they are secure, not necessarily peaceful, and this will be false security.
Mm-hmm. Would it necessarily be a peace from fear?
That's a good point. What is Pax Romana?
Supposedly, wherever the Romans came and conquered, they established the Roman peace, but they subjugated everybody. Nobody had the nerve to fight against the Roman Empire, which is why they had peace. But it was a fearful peace. People who didn't dare to fight back.
Rather different from the peace of God, which passes all understanding, isn't it? Peace through terror.
That's what the communists would have.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay. Yes.
This is I wonder why they use papacy, a little horn, to picture papacy, showing that God just permitted him to have a little power, that he didn't have all power, or why a little horn?
Okay. How about verse 24?
Power is mighty, but not as much as God. But not by his own power, and he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people.
How?
Well, wouldn't Satan be the one there that's the power?
Satan is certainly the power behind that throne, but what's the thought of he's going to be powerful, but not by his own power? Is that a contradiction?
Yes,
excuse me, that's Cindy first, then Kevin, then Hal.
Would that be the difference between religious and civil gives the power to the religious?
I think that's right on the track. And it's Kevin, then Hal, and Phil.
Well, I was just wondering, the piece that you were just talking about, that Phil brought up, I was wondering, would that be the same as in Ezekiel 38:11, when they talk about unwalled villages?
There could be a similarity. Then it's Hal and Phil.
I didn't hear what Cindy said.
I didn't either.
Okay, could you repeat it once more?
Just that it would be the civil giving the power to the religious, civil armies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now Phil.
I was just going to say that there was no power that they could exercise that the Heavenly Father didn't all allow.
That is true. How did the Pope how did the Pope conduct the Crusades?
He blessed them.
Blessed who?
The Crusades.
His own army?
Phil, why don't you move it?
No, he sent the kings, not the kings.
What kings?
Well, the kings of Europe. Richard the Lionhearted and so on.
Did he send his own army?
He didn't have them.
That's
he used
right.
The armies of the kings to do his warring for him.
Okay. So, and his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. That is, he used others as his hired guns. So, there I think we see the difference with the little horn. There's something different about this power. It's little but mighty. He has a very small army.
He had the little power to control the larger power.
I think the little army is probably his bodyguard.
It's about it. It goes only a little farther than that. He does have what they call the Swiss Guard. That's in the Vatican. But primarily he has used the armies of nations that profess to be Roman Catholic, and with inducements and threats of excommunication or destroying their economies were what motivated the different nations to go do his dirty work. So in this sense, the little horn was different from the animals that preceded it. We see this little horn again in Daniel, the 7th chapter, with the same type of thought. So now, going through the additional verses here, in the 17th verse, Daniel fell upon his face, that is, he bowed down with his face straight down, and then the angel says, "Understand, O son of man, for the vision belongs to when?"
The end.
Okay, now,
the
time of the end. That's an expression that we see a few places. Where do we see this expression?
Revelation, isn't it?
We see it in the Daniel 11th chapter, verses 35 and 40. And we see it again in Daniel 12:4. Well, the question is, when is the time of the end, and the end of what?
The end of his reign, the Pope.
Ah, okay.
Power.
Let's see if that is consistent with these other expressions for the time of the end. Looking at Daniel 11:35. Let's see. David, would you like to read Daniel 11:35? And in a moment, we'll ask Anne if she would like to read Daniel 11:40. And then, in a moment, after that, we'll ask Annabelle if she'd like to read Daniel 12, verse 4. Ready for Daniel 11:35.
"And some of them of understanding shall fall to try them, and to purge, and to make them white, even to the time of the end, because it is yet for a time appointed."
Okay. In this context, we'll recall that it's talking about the church, the little flock, to purify and to make them white, even to the time of the end. So it's talking about something towards the latter stage of the church here on earth. Now let's have Daniel 12:40, and we're talking about the papacy still, or the little horn, in this same context.
There's no Daniel
12:40. Pardon me, I'm sorry, 11:40. You're very right. Okay, so it's been talking in verses 36 through 39 about things connected with the papacy. I believe that's right. And so now we have the king of the south and the king of the north coming against him. So this is consistent with it being the time of the end of papal rule, and we go to Daniel 12:4.
But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased.
Mm-hmm. And is that also consistent with the thought of the end of papal dominion? As far as we can tell, all of those are. So, returning to Daniel 8:17, as we read this, we could stop to think about what are all the possibilities. When was this vision given? Teresa?
When Daniel was a captive in Babylon.
Okay, so Babylon was still reigning, and what does Daniel 8:1 say about the time that this vision was given?
Third year of the reign of King Belshazzar.
That's right. Now, when did Belshazzar start reigning?
About 555 B.C., according to the...
Okay.
Around there.
Kevin?
Around 550 B.C.
Okay. And indeed, it's somewhere in that neighborhood, because we think that after the fall of three short-lived kings after Nebuchadnezzar, sometimes referred to as Nebuchadnezzar II, to avoid confusing him with one that was hundreds of years before, then it was in 556 that it's thought that Nabonide took the kingship, murdered Nergal-Sarnessar's son, and took the throne to himself. And it was about the next year. Some say it could have been a few years after that, up
554, to the 553,
somewhere in that neighborhood.
We have to remember that BC, you get the numbers get littler instead
right.
of bigger, yeah.
So anyway, what we know about Nabonide is that he had a rebellion in the west, and he went with the army of Babylon, or part of the army of Babylon, to put down the rebellion in the west. And he found a place that's somewhere east of the Jordan River, referred to as Tema. It's spelled either T-E-M-A or T-E-I-M-A. And there he conquered and he established a capital for himself. But before he went on the expedition, he left his son, the crown prince, as the ruler in Babylon. So, somewhere in the region of 555 to 550 is when Belshazzar began to reign. The latest, then, that the third year of Belshazzar could be would be somewhere around 548 or 547 B.C. And that's still almost 10 years before Babylon fell. So one reasonable thought, if we have only the Daniel, the 8th chapter that we're thinking about, is that, well, he's saying that the angel is telling Daniel, this vision pertains to a lot of years hence. It's not for roughly another decade that this will come to pass. Now, we got benefit by looking at Daniel, the 11th and 12th chapters, in finding out how else the expression is used, the time of the end. Somebody else might say, well, maybe it's talking about the time of the end of the ram, or maybe it's talking about the time of the end for the goat. But as we saw in Daniel 11th and 12th chapter, it has to do with the time of the end of the whole vision, of all of the nasties in this vision, including the little horn. We can perhaps better understand then Daniel 8:27, that when Daniel heard that it was going to be a lot of years before this ever came to pass, Daniel fainted and was sick for several days. Think for yourself. Suppose someone who knew what he was talking about said, Annabelle, the church isn't going to be complete for another 2,300 years.
I would be depressed. I would be sick.
Yes, that's
it would be hard not to be
discouraged.
That's right. Fortunately, we're pretty sure it ain't so.
Yeah.
But we can see why Daniel was made sick. And it also confirms that Daniel understood by this that it was going to be maybe centuries before all this would be fulfilled. So, yes.
When it says many shall run to and fro and all that, does that mean in the world or does that mean of papacy?
And that is in which verse?
Daniel 12:4. Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book, even the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is this referring to papacy this will happen to, or the? It's referring to the world of mankind?
Or to Bible students?
I think it's the Bible students. Yeah, they're running to and fro.
Let's take a look at Amos 8, 11, and 12, and see if we see a similarity here.
Okay.
Where?
Amos 8, verses 11 and 12. It's the next to last chapter in Amos. That's just maybe four or five books after Daniel. We've got Daniel, and then Hosea, and then Joel.
Amos what?
Amos 8, 11, and 12. And Phil, would you like to read those for us?
Would you let somebody else, because I can't read
sure.
it fast enough.
Okay. That being the case, we'll ask Speedy Wagoner to read that for us.
Verses 11 and 12. Behold, days are coming, declares the Lord God, when I will send a famine in the land, not a famine of bread or a thirst of water, but for hearing the words of the Lord. And people will stagger from sea to sea, and from the north even to the east, they will go to and fro to seek the word of the Lord, but they will not find it.
Okay, does this give us perhaps a somewhat a parallel idea here that may help us to explain what's talked about?
I think it must be of the world, because they run to and fro and they still don't understand anything about the truth or God.
This is a good point.
And they're seeking the truth.
That's right. Have you ever seen a time when people gathered together from around the world in one hemisphere and then in another to have this conference and that conference to try to find out the truth in physics, the truth in chemistry, the truth in sociology, the truth in politics? What is it? All right, general semantics. We know who had to bring that one in. But conferences of all sorts to discover the truth about this, that, and everything. And yet, for all of that, they're farther than ever from knowing the truth. Remarkable, isn't it?
They haven't no. had the group, the world of counselors, all the churches getting together trying to decide what is the title of that group? I didn't say it right.
World Council of
yeah.
Churches.
Mm-hmm. World Council of yeah. Churches, seeking the truth.
As the salt leaves the earth, wherewith shall it be salted?
That is true. So now, yes.
And in Elijah, when he died, the sons of the prophet were sent out for 3 days to look for or
they sent
I don't know
themselves
that,
out?
Yeah, they sent themselves out. I don't know if that would tie in or not. But they didn't find him.
They didn't.
Find
right.
the church. Or the.
Mm-hmm. So there evidently will be some effort made. Some
find
skeptics.
The truth, yeah. mm-hmm.
Perhaps within the Bible student movement, too.
Could be. We will see.
I don't know if that would require judgment on our part, and we've learned enough, I hope, not to judge each other. I hope.
That doesn't mean we have to judge each other, but
I
think there's scriptures that say that the world will creep in and stuff like that, doesn't
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So this will happen at a time when the church, when the little flock is gone, and the great company, I think, also.
That's true.
So there could be some remnant of Bible student movement left after that. That's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be from denominations, or it could be from some other source. But
could
religious sources.
Could you find the prophet, the religious, and they're looking for him?
Yeah.
I like that.
Yes.
I'm going to ask this question on 24, because we were in there before. where it says, and he shall destroy wonderfully. Does that mean the people will look upon him because of what had happened, that maybe not because of his own power, because of somebody else's power, great things happen in his favor?
I think that would be generally the right idea, and I see a hand behind you.
My Bible implies a mental, intellectual destruction. It says, instead of wonderfully destroy, it says corrupt.
That is good. In the margin it says corrupt. And not only was destruction common in medieval Europe, but also corruption abounded. Remember reading, I think it was in the Oxford History of the Christian Church, may have been Cambridge, that on the eve of the Reformation, salvation was not to be attained so much by the abstinence from sin as through its pardon by the appointed channel, the priest, whose supernatural powers were in no way impaired by the scandals of his daily life.
Yeah.
And in other scriptures here in Daniel, it uses the word by flattery. And certainly the popes put down one king and raised up another according to their will. Yes, Teresa.
In verse 23, when it mentions a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences, does that refer to consorting with demons, dark sentences?
It can include that. We do have a rather parallel thought in one of the letters to the seven churches. Let's see if it is Pergamos or Thyatira. I think it's, Thyatira in Revelation chapter 2, verse 24. Would somebody like to read that? Okay.
But to you I say, to the Rephora and Thyatira, as many as have not this teaching, who know not the deep things of Satan, as they are wont to say, I cast upon you none other burden.
Okay. The deep things of Satan. And all brethren, regardless of their placement of Sardis, generally allow that within Thyatira is included the church during the Dark Ages.
There was a lot of witchcraft and black magic practiced at that time.
That was quite true.
And the Catholic Church was notorious for practicing black masses because it takes a confirmed priest to do that.
So, all of that was included, that the Roman universities of that time, of course, were not open to Protestants, were they? But they claimed to have the great wisdom of the world for those who have gone to school in their universities.
How about the magic and the appearances of Mary all over the world?
That's right. And the great miracles that they professed to occur were supposed to be the signs of their approval to God. Those who are eligible for being canonized are those who have had visions from God, among other things in addition. But immediately, of course, that rules out any of the true church.
Yeah.
Okay, so returning to Daniel, the 8th chapter, the 18th verse, as far as I can tell, doesn't tell us a great deal more about the interpretation of the vision. But in the 19th chapter, we have the promise that it will be explained here.
You mean the 19th verse?
You're quite right. Thank you. I'll have trouble finding that 19th chapter. The 19th verse, I will make thee know what shall be in the latter time of the indignation. What does it mean? What's the indignation? Teresa?
It's the thing that causes the abomination, that causes desolation. It's when the papacy transforms all the words of of the Bible into its own teachings and brings in all these masses to take away the permanent sacrifice of Christ.
Putting away the continual burnt offering. The continual burnt offering or sacrifice of Christ is no longer valid once for all by their teaching and practice.
Yeah, they have to do it every day. It's just
by the priest, by the institution of the institution, which is the ecclesiastical system, the Church of Rome, not by Christ's application of Christ's sacrifice. There must be an intervention of the Church for anything to be valid in their teaching. Now, is there anything in what is said of the ram early in chapter 8 that would qualify as an indignation?
In verse 20, it says the ram, which thou sawest, having two horns, are the kings of Media and Persia.
That's right. Now the question is, in what we saw of the vision from 1 through 14, is there anything about the ram that would qualify as indignation? I see at least one shaking the head, no. As far as I know, that's true.
Verse 7.
Okay. Okay, and how about verse 7?
Says, and I saw him come beside the ram, and he was enraged at him. That's the closest thing I find to indignation.
Okay, so anger or rage doesn't itself necessarily cause something that the Lord would be indignant over. Teresa?
We get the impression that the ram sought power, mainly. He wanted to magnify himself.
That's right.
He didn't do any lewd, low, ugly things like the little horn does.
No, that's right. No suggestion of blasphemy, for example, or destroying the religion of Israel. In fact, that's specifically what they did not do, was interfere with the religions of the peoples that they conquered. They set Israel free to worship Jehovah.
I was just going to say, it goes on to tell you that the ram's two horns were broken. The horns represents power, and it tells you that they had no power in the ram. There was no power in the ram to stand before him.
Yes.
He was so cast down to the ground.
The house of Media and the house of Persia were broken. Now, how about the he-goat through verse 8? Is there anything there that would qualify as an indignation?
The he-goat there represents Alexander the Great.
Or does the great horn represent Alexander?
Oh, I see what you're talking about.
We have, yes, Teresa?
Same thing, speed, power, and a desire to exalt itself. But what distinguishes the little horn is that everything it does contains a deceit in it, and the others didn't use deceit. They used power, strength.
That's right. It's not until we get to the little horn that we find things happening like the stars being cast down to the ground and some of the host. And he magnified himself even to the prince of the host and took away from him the continual burnt offering. The place of his sanctuary was cast down. The host was given over, together with a continual burnt offering, through transgression. And it cast down truth to the ground, and it did its pleasure and prospered. Here we see something about which to be indignant. And so the question is, how long shall be the vision concerning the continual burnt offering and the transgression that maketh desolate? Well, that's the little horn segment of this vision. I think I suggested the last time on that, that it, in this connection, it's at least interesting that the rise of Rome would commence with the Celts having withdrawn their siege of Rome in B.C. 387. And from there, B.C. 387, 2300 years, does bring us to 1914. It may be a coincidence, but if so, it's still an interesting coincidence. So, when it's talking about in the latter time
what
of
happened in 387, Jim, I'm sorry.
Up till then, for a few years, somewhere in the neighborhood of 390 to 387, the Celts or Celts, the ones from Western Europe, Tarshish in Genesis 10, were besieging Rome. Rome begins to expand and defeat the Samnites and the Samnite Wars, and then there were the Punic Wars, and they...
Tarshish was overthrown in 387.
They were driven off. They were either driven off or they decided it wasn't worth it anymore, and they withdrew back to their own territory in Western Europe, or perhaps across the Alps to Western Europe. But they left rather than to continue the siege of Rome. So for 2,300 years, that was the period in which Rome was rising or holding its own for the most part. Oh, they suffered a setback in the Reformation and again in the French Revolution. But more dramatically, it's what's been happening since the beginning of World War I that has been desolating the Vatican Empire. So, it's been pretty continual since then.
Since World War I, or?
Even more directly, since World War II. But World War I has been sort of the, what shall we call it? That was the apex of Western power. And since that time, we begin to see the nations doing each other in. That the so-called greatness of even the United States has been dwindling since World War II, quite evidently. But we don't have to worry about the kings of Europe since World War I. There haven't been any that have had any real power since then. Queen Victoria even died just a few years before World War I.
What about 1799?
Okay, the French Revolution definitely had a power in setting back the papal power. Because in 1797, I think it was, 1796, I guess, Napoleon took power in Italy. He went down there as a general and beat up on a bunch of them and seized power for the French Revolution. In 1797, the Pope was definitely ill, apparently unto death, and Napoleon issued a decree that when the Pope died, there should be no successor elected. Now, Napoleon was out of Italy, I think before the end of that year, and he was down in an Egyptian campaign. The French Directory was wary of him, so about the only thing they were willing to let him do was go on a very distant foreign campaign, which would keep him out of French politics. So he was in Egypt at the time that the Pope pulled something that displeased the French Directory, and so they sent General Berthier down to Rome to get the Pope out of Rome, and he spent a few more months someplace farther north in Italy, and then the General Berthier took him as a prisoner to France, I think somewhere in southern France. And there he was in the upper story of a house. And, yes, Kevin?
Well, I just wanted to make a suggestion.
Go ahead.
I noticed you put together a pamphlet on chapters of history, and you have most of the dates written down here, so I was wondering if you could read that.
Okay, fine.
It's answering a lot of the questions.
Okay, fine. I don't happen to have that in front of me, so would you like to begin reading where you think it's appropriate? Not later than the ninth verse, certainly.
Read it loud, Kevin.
Okay. I'll start at the ninth verse. Could you read the scripture, at least?
Sure. I'll read the scripture and then the response. And out of one of them came forth a little horn, which waxed exceeding great toward the south and toward the east and toward the glorious land.
And to the west, Rome grew up amid Greek culture and conquered Carthage, and all North Africa, Asia Minor, and Judea.
Mm-hmm. And it waxed great, even to the host of heaven, and some of the host and of the stars it cast down to the ground and trampled upon them.
And Roman Emperor Constantine, A.D. 313 to 337, placed himself as an arbiter of the Christian church and caused many prominent Christians to become involved in the world where they were subjugated.
Yes. 11. Yea, and it magnified itself even to the prince of the host, and it took away from him the continual burnt offering, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down.
Then the Roman Pope put himself on a par with Christ, and he substituted masses and saint worship for the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, and justification of faith was thrown down.
And the host was given over to it together with the continual burnt offering through transgression. And it cast down the truth to the ground, and it did its pleasure and prospered.
And on account of the sins of the Spirit begotten, Christians in Christ's salvation will not be kept from papal oppression, and papacy will... And on account of the sins of the Spirit begotten, Christians in Christ's salvation will not be kept from papal oppression, and papacy will suppress the truth and will do as it pleases.
Then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said unto that certain one who spake, How long shall be the vision concerning the continual burnt offering and the transgression that maketh desolate, to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot?
But faithful Christians want to know how long righteousness will be oppressed.
And he said unto me, Unto 2,300 evenings and mornings, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed.
The answer is that it, Roman power, median to Roman power, oppression of the Lord's people, will last 2,300 years, and afterwards the righteous will be justified by the day of wrath.
Okay, thank you. That ends the portion concerning the vision of the little horn itself. And with the question in the 19th verse, and the answer that I'm going to tell you about the latter time of the indignation, that means the little horn coming to its end, he starts out with the beginning of the vision. The ram that you saw, what did it represent? 20th verse.
Go ahead. Media and Persia.
That's right. The two horns are the kings of Media and Persia. What did it say about those two horns?
They were broken.
Okay, and in the back in the third verse, the two horns were high, but
one was higher than the other.
What?
One was higher than the other.
That's right. And what does it say right after that about the highest horn?
Came up last.
That's right. So
what did she say then?
Well,
came up last.
That's right.
The higher one came up last.
There were two high horns.
Last. Okay, I didn't.
There were two high horns. No. They grew up out of the ram. This one grows up first, and then this one grows up higher. That's what it's saying. The king of Media came up first, and the king of Persia came up last, but kept on growing higher. Now, there's pretty good reason, I think, for saying that we've got scriptural support for that. We go back to Genesis 10, and under the nations that came from Japheth is Madai, the Medes. And Genesis 10, maybe around the third verse, second, third, or fourth, one of those. Now, there's no mention of Persia in here. But what does Persia mean? And did we encounter it earlier in Daniel? Would someone like to read Daniel 5:28?
I have it.
Go ahead.
Daniel 5:28.
25th is where it starts the context, 25th. But 28 is the explanation.
Persia, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians.
Okay. Now my version has a note under Paris. Does anyone else's have a footnote on the meaning of the word Paris?
I've got written in the margin, but I did it myself.
Oh, okay then. Kevin?
Divided.
Divided is right. And because the kingdom of the Mitanni, or the Medes, or Madai, had one part of it that divided from the other part. They wound up being fairly well united. Maybe the situation isn't too different from what happened to Britain and its American colonies, that one faction broke away from Britain. And yet at the present time, England has allies in both Canada and the United States. So in this case, there was the group that divided from the Medes, the Paris, or division, and yet the Medes and the Persians were both cooperating against the common enemy, Babylon. The king of the Medes came up first, and then the kingdom of the Persians came up afterwards under Cyrus and his successors and became even greater. Okay, so then the explanation continues. Would somebody like to read Daniel 8:21?
And the rough goat is the king of Grisha, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king.
Okay, that's good. Now in the margin, the Hebrew word is Yavin, from Ionian. Again, if we go back to Genesis 10, we see there's Yavin, and then there are four divisions of the Ionians. But by this time, most of those divisions are cooperating together, and so we say the kingdom of Grisha, or it uncovers the Ionians and most of the ones who broke from them, because now they're united again under Alexander. And even the atheist has to acknowledge that Daniel is talking about Alexander, though he has to postulate a very late date for the writing of Daniel, otherwise he has to admit that there was something to prophecy. So now we have the 22nd verse, and what does this 22nd verse tell us? Teresa?
That the he goat was broken, but the they arose after him, poor king, with not in his power, and that's because Alexander died after the king.
Okay, Alexander died within about 15 years. The generals were starting to break away. First Ptolemy in Egypt, and right after him, Seleucus in Syria. Then we had Lysimachus and Cassander in Thrace and Macedonia. So, again, even the atheist has to acknowledge that it was in the four kingdoms that Alexander's empire was divided. So, we come to something after that, though. In the 23rd, by the by, before I forget it, we have here four horns. Back in the previous chapter, we have the third beast, the Grecian beast, the leopard beast, that has four heads and also four wings. Now, no animal can have more than one head active at a time. So the four horns here would seem to correspond to the four wings in respect of power, because wings can coexist and work together. Horns can coexist and work together, but heads have to be successive. So how about the 23rd verse?
Shall I read it?
Okay.
And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding
dark sentences shall stand up.
And the promise in Revelation was to them that have not been involved with the neat things of Satan.
Yeah, Revelation, what now?
That'd be the second chapter, somewhere on the 24th verse, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Glad somebody can remember. It's under the Thyatira.
Verse 23 corresponds to Revelation 2:24.
Yeah. So, again, in the 24th verse, his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power, not by his own armies. Now, it says destroy wonderfully, though from the standpoint of the church, I wish there could be a different word than wonderful. Because it certainly is not wonderful in our eyes, and even less so in the Lord's eyes.
Well, basically, wonderful means in a way that causes wonder. So you are surprised at how he uses his wiles to corrupt so many people and destroy them. It doesn't mean nicely, but in an amazing fashion.
That's right. That's good. And Robert, you had your hand up.
Yeah, a more updated translation uses the word extraordinarily.
Okay, that's good. We might justify in degree the word wondered with Revelation 13:3. Anne, would you like to read that for us? Revelation 13:3. There we have it, that the whole earth, or the whole world, wondered after the beast. And that wasn't wonderful either, was it? But it was extraordinary. That's a good word. So, the things that are spoken there in the 24th and 25th verse would seem to be things that the papacy would fulfill, and fulfill quite entirely, with one exception. What might be the one exception? I said might be.
Exception to what?
That the papacy has fulfilled the things spoken in the 24th and 25th verses.
Well, the fact that he has been broken without hand hasn't occurred yet.
That's right. So we can't say about that at this point from looking at past history. Now, what does that mean, broken without hand?
God's doing, not man.
Yes, that's right. Well, how can it be true that the papacy will be broken without the hand of man?
Aren't they falling apart from within? They're destroying themselves.
Okay, that's
it's like a cancer, it eats from within.
That's a good point, because Jehu didn't slay Jezebel directly. What did he do?
Had her own eunuch cast her down.
That's right.
The dogs ate her.
The expression without hands brings us back to Daniel 2:45, doesn't it? Let's read the 44th and 45th verses. And David, would you like to read those for us? Daniel chapter 2, verses 44 and 45.
And in the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed. And that kingdom will not be left for another people. It will crush and put an end to all these kingdoms, but it will itself endure forever.
Okay.
Inasmuch as he saw that stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, that it crushed the iron, the bronze, the clay, and the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will take place in the future, so the dream is true, and its interpretation is trustworthy.
Good. And we're interested here. The stone was cut out of the mountain without hands. the kingdom of Christ.
Church.
Starts, for most of the gospel age, the kingdom of Christ consisted of one individual. And then the resurrection of the sleeping saints adds more to it until finally the church is complete. Now just as an aside, in the 44th verse, when it says, in the days of those kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom, it would suggest to me that the resurrection of the sleeping saints had to take place while there were still reigning kings in what's called Christendom. And since World War I pretty well put an end to the kings of Europe, one would suggest that the resurrection of the sleeping saints should have taken place prior then to 1914. Returning then to without hands, I'll have to admit that since I can't look back on the event to its fulfillment, I don't know exactly how all the details will take place. But it does seem that Jezebel was not simply overrun in her palace, that it wasn't by military might that the papal kingdom has been utterly destroyed, but evidently a good part of it will be from within. In one place it says the great city Babylon will be divided into three parts. Just what that means remains to be seen.
I was wondering if the nominals could have something to do with it. Could they be the eunuchs?
That or how?
Or are the eunuchs the cardinals? And so
I should think it would be the own ostensibly celibate priesthood.
The three parts I would think would be what would be left of Jezebel after the dogs ate her.
Yeah, that could well be.
The hands and those that assist.
There was more than one city that Jehu approached after the fall of Jezebel.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps then that there were three different ruling places in Israel at that time. Two of them is all I can vouch for sure from the picture of Jehu and Jezebel. But I can go back and look again, as each of us can. So we are assured, though, that whatever it is, it shall be broken without hand, that the chief opposition, evidently, is to be from heaven. And we do have the assurance that this honor have all his saints.
In verse 45 there, in Daniel 3,
mm-hmm.
no, 2, for as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, why is the iron broke first, then the brass, then the clay, and then the silver and the gold? Is it because that's the most powerful? It would have to be. But according to what we know, it was not destroyed. It came into power after the others were broken.
Your question is good, because if we could eliminate the clay, then it's simply reiterating these things in reverse order, that the bottom part is smashed first, and then it seemingly comes tumbling down like a building if you dynamited the foundation out from under it, which is how they do it in New York when they take down a skyscraper. There wouldn't be any other way to do it, because you wouldn't want it to topple over that way. You'd take a whole lot of other buildings with it. So they dynamite the first floor of the foundation and it falls down in place. But
burning out the timbers.
Yeah, they can do that too.
Like they did yesterday, the day before.
Yeah. The confusion here for me comes in goes iron, brass, then clay in the middle. So this would be suggesting that World War I commenced by first being against Rome. I don't see how it was. Italy wound up in the so-called winning side of World War I. Not in World War II, though. And the brass, that would be something to do with Greece. The clay, the ecclesiastical Rome. The silver, don't know what the Medes and the Persians have to do with it, politically. Gold, a literal Babylon, still not. Yeah, there is one thing that has survived from them. The cultures and the things that they've wrought in the hearts of the people and taught them. That many people, even to this day, are quite proud of what's been preserved from the Roman culture, the Grecian culture before it, the Medo-Persian culture, especially things done on enormous scales, and Babylonian culture from before it, including the religion. But I will have to confess, I don't know why this sequence with the clay interposed between the brass and the silver. Add that to my I don't know list. Anybody a thought? Okay. If not, then we go to the 26th verse. What do we learn from the 26th verse?
About Daniel 8:26.
That's right. It does tell us one thing.
Does it have to be a secret?
That there's something secret about it, to be sure. I say it tells us something. I think that it tells us something, yes.
Well, it tells us that the vision is going to come many, many centuries hence.
Okay. And the 2300 evenings and mornings then did not start in the third year of Belshazzar. In fact, it probably did not start with the beginning of the Medo-Persian ram. But since we're told about the 2300 evenings and mornings in connection with the rottenness part of the vision concerning the burnt offering, the continual burnt offering, and the transgression that maketh desolate, it should be a long time hence from, say, around 550 B.C. If 387 is the correct time, then that was more than 100 years later, as others suggest that it has to do with a time around 450 B.C., then that too was on the order of a century later. So it was enough to tell Daniel that it's not due in his own time, and he passed out. It had been quite stressful, this whole thing. And indeed, we can apply that in our own heart. We know what's coming, to a degree at least. Whether it's wars, depressions, Armageddon, we know these things are happening at this end of the age. And our hearts should not be delighted because these guys are getting what's coming to them. It should make us sick to our stomachs as well. The only thing is that we know that there will be something after it. If there weren't, then we should continue to be sick to our stomachs, as Daniel was.
Like the scriptures say, we're to rejoice, lift up your head and rejoice and all that, but it also tells you no trial is joyous for the moment. You can know the answer and still not like the trial.
Yes. That is true.
And suffer a great deal, but still rejoice in the Lord.
Okay, is there anything further on the 8th chapter before we set down for Robert to start on 9:1 on the... That will be in 2 Sundays, the last Sunday in July, which would be the 29th.
Jim, I think why don't we, for the next 2 weeks, we'll go ahead and we'll study the 6th volume, and we'll wait for your return. And so three weeks from today, why don't we start the 9th chapter?
Okay. Fair enough to me.
Unless you're ready for all my other questions on the internet.
You haven't told me what the questions are, but if you'd like to ask them for next time, you can think about them.
Why don't I hold them?
Okay, sure.
That's a whole new ball game.
Does anyone know what page in the 6th volume we're going to be on next Sunday?
That's right, because... several were not here last Sunday.
Oh, yes.
Lyle Murray was here.
I don't have a sixth volume. We took them out of the blue suitcase.
Do you want to use my name?
Well, it wouldn't be written in yours.
No, but can you have
Kevin might remember.
Somewhere.
Oh, you weren't here. Well, that's right.
Tracy, if you can hand it to me,
we
I think I can at least come close. That, I believe, is correct. And there was a subhead, the Apostles, not Lord of God's Heritage. If you remember approximately how many paragraphs?
No, I don't, but we covered two or three anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since so few were here, let's go ahead and start from there again. We'll skim over the first few paragraphs quickly.
I like that, because...
Okay.
Yeah. Start at 229.
229
and
6
o'clock. That's a good idea.
Who all was able to be here?
Phil and I and...
Lyle
and Pearl and...
And Vicki.
Mm-hmm. Are they right here on a Sunday?
Yeah.
Wow. That's because
nobody else is here.
Yeah.
Jim
graciously took the meeting for us. Yes.
Did you see what the date was in 2 weeks when we'd be back together the next chapter?
I think it would be August 5th. In fact, that's really not too bad because two Sundays from now is the fifth Sunday anyhow. So
I don't think
you'd have
like
to have two studies,
have
one or the other.
Oh, I see. Kevin and I aren't going to be here. Could we ask someone to be sure and tape the meeting for us? Al, will you be sure to tape August the 5th on the end of on Ezekiel?
We're here. We will, yeah. We're here. August the 5th?
Mm-hmm. Tape the meeting because Kevin and I will be gone the first two Sundays in August.
And I'll be gone the Sunday before that.
Yeah, but I'll be here to tape it.
Ah, Little Rock, Arkansas? Fine.
You what?
Do we have bread in there?
I met a sister in Eagle Rock, or excuse me, Little Rock some time ago.
Where's Eagle Rock?
There was a sister higher, but I think she died. There are brethren in Arkansas. There are Cole relatives, I think, still in Jonesboro. And there's a Morris family somewhere, but there are also some newer brethren there that I don't even know about. So we'll try and find out what we can.
I know Brother Russell spoke in Paragould one time.
Oh, that's right. The Dillards were at Paragould. I met them in Paragould. That's up in the extreme northeast.
And I have a brother and sister-in-law that live there.
Oh.
Virginia Palmer wanted me to tell you the brother that you kept wanting her to get in touch with, she did, and he came to one of their meetings, the ex-Jehovah's Witness.
Yes.
Do you know who I'm talking
Richard
about?
Richard Rowley?
I guess so.
Okay.
And that she's been in touch with him, and she thought you'd like to know that.
Good.
Oh, God.
He's one of the better ones, Richard.
Yeah.
Very much so.
He attended her meeting, the meeting that she meets at her house.
Okay. Is there anything else? Yes, Edith.
Mary Chester, was her husband a consecrated brother?
No, he wasn't. He was a relative of the Coles from San Diego, who originally came from Jonesboro, Arkansas.
I haven't heard from her at all.
Hey, what hymn should we close with?
I called and gave her my new telephone number for her son's machine. But
you have her new telephone number, Edith's new telephone number, Jim?
No.
Al, can you tell?
I'll give it to him.
Our new telephone number.
I didn't know there was a new one.
1714.
981-0253. Okay.
We were getting too many extraneous calls, and when they found out some of them were lewd, she said they didn't start just to change.
That's good.
And I have since had one.
Yeah.
Someone called.
What song are you going to play? Yeah.
And said hello.
What song?
And I didn't say anything. They sang a song. Kind of soft. I didn't say anything.
Kevin, what do you want, Kevin?
321.
What is it?
321.
Take your hold on that, tell you.
Yeah.
Who's this?
Teresa says it's an easy song. That's why I picked it. She's not free. I'll choose a harder song. She's free. But she'll choose it for me.
Today, and may we continue to be grateful for what we have and not complain of what we don't have, for thou knowest our needs better than we. We pray that thou bless each one as we separate to go to our several homes and bring us back together again. In the name of our loving Savior Jesus, we ask these things. Amen.